Alexander Shelley, welcome to Sunday Night at the TSO.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we like to ask some get-to-know-you questions for first-timers on Sunday Night at the TSO, so if you don't mind indulging me, I have a few here for you.
Of course.
What is your drink of choice during a night out?
Well, it depends what kind of night out it is, I suppose, but if it's a particularly fun night out with friends, then I think I might start with a whiskey sour or something like that.
Oh, sounds good. What about after a concert?
Oh, gosh. Again, it depends. If there's a follow-up concert coming the next night, I tend to remain pretty disciplined and I probably steer clear of the alcohol. But if it's the final concert of a week, then, you know, maybe again, I'd start with a whiskey, maybe an old-fashioned or a glass of champagne or something, you know, celebratory.
Very festive. What composer, dead or alive, would you like to have dinner with?
Gosh. Well, as with those questions, it's always as much a question of who do you think it would be the most fun to talk to and most interesting to talk to rather than whose music do I admire most, because that would be a long list.
Fair enough.
I think there are composers like Shostakovich, Prokofiev, whose particular life paths and the pressures that were put under them during their lives would be very interesting. But then I have to say the combining of this sort of humanistic and then the spiritual of the very real and the really ephemeral that Mahler brings to bear in his music was also, I think, a reflection of the way he looked at the world. I think he thought a lot about life, and I think a conversation with him would be very interesting. So I'm just going to, for the sake of today, pick Mahler. Why
okay.
not?
Who is one of the most interesting artists that you've discovered through your work with the National Arts Center Orchestra?
Gosh, well, it's one of the privileges of this job, isn't it, that we get to collaborate with and work with so many brilliant artists. Somebody who jumps right to the front of my mind among a packed field of extraordinary artists would be Nicole Luzet, for example. I think that there is something about her particular and peculiar and unique, extraordinary way of approaching orchestral music and her combination with the visual aspect and the meeting between digital and analog, which is part of our age, that is quite extraordinary and is not really replicated in any of my other experiences with composers. So she's somebody who would jump to mind.
Now, to get to know your background a little bit, you grew up in a musical family, you played piano and then cello. What attracted you to conducting?
Well, I think it's the sound of the orchestra and the extraordinary music that's written for the orchestra. I know I was very young. You know, growing up, I would listen to cassettes. I don't know if anyone remembers those, but they were. I would listen to Mahler symphonies and Beethoven symphonies and Scheherazade and the huge universe of extraordinary symphonic music. And I found that particularly in that music, it was like observing worlds full of characters interacting, each with their own distinct personality, going off on distinct adventures that were sometimes tangible, but sometimes were just the kind of scent of an experience or the color of an experience. And I found sort of listening to those cassettes going to sleep as a kid, that was a wonderful kind of garden of imagination, this sonic world that an orchestra evoked. And so as I got a little bit older and I was playing more instruments myself, I started to ask my parents if they could also give me the scores of the music that I was listening to. And I would follow along and I started to develop this real thirst to also be the one that was regulating the relationship between all the different voices and the different characters and different personalities that were being evoked in the score, which is really what a conductor is. So I guess I realized before I knew that that was what I wanted to do, that that's what I wanted to do, because that's what you do as a conductor.
Right. Well, actually, that leads me right to the next question, and perhaps you've answered it or maybe not, but from your perspective, what is the most important thing that a conductor brings? We're always exploring the mysterious art of conducting here on the show, so I always like to ask.
I think that ultimately, the most important thing that a conductor brings is to move the musicians and the audience into a space of imagination and adventure, that you move from the daily concerns, whether they be of an audience coming home from work or the musicians, to move from the technical and everyday aspects of making music into the why of making music, into the let's allow ourselves to connect with that bit of us that is the origin of creation. It's the reason that music exists. And if you can create that atmosphere and that mood in rehearsals and then conjure it in concert, then whatever else happens, you're in the right headspace.
I wanted to ask you also, you know, in our ever-evolving world, how do you see the role of a symphony orchestra and perhaps the National Arts Center Orchestra in particular?
Well, it's multifaceted. And because orchestras engage with a multiplicity of audiences within any given community and across communities and across a province, a territory, a nation, and across the world, it needs to be different things at different times. I think that the most effective thing an orchestra can do in terms of attracting the right kind of interest in repertoire that is from the past and in creating the right kind of foundations for music for the future is to allow audiences and musicians and staff, administration, everybody who's involved in an organization to feel the connectivity between what we do on stage and what we commission and what we create and our times. Nothing was created in a vacuum. Beethoven didn't write symphonies in a vacuum. Strauss, Shostakovich, anybody. They wrote music in the time in which they lived, and very often, whether it was explicit or implicit, their pressing concerns were the concerns of their time, sometimes in a superficial sense, sometimes in a very profound sense. The idea of enlightenment, which stretched across centuries, or very specific problems of a moment, or specific opportunities, or prevailing wonderment or enthusiasm. And the fact that our world in the last 100 years, as symphony orchestras moved from being at the leading edge of what was new to also representing what has been, because let's not forget, in the time of both Beethoven and Mozart, and through even until Brahms and beyond, people were most interested in hearing the latest thing, not what had been. And that morphed and evolved. But in the time in which we need to now do both things, I feel like we could lay a little more emphasis on the relationship between what symphonies, orchestras are now and our own time. That means commissioning. That means thinking about the issues of our time. That means thinking about the role of art in society. What function does art play? Even if that function then is actually something that is not in itself functional. It might be saying that it acts and serves as a counterbalance to all things that are functional or tangible, because we all need that and society needs that. It needs spaces to dream and to be lacking in substance, but to be highly evocative. We know that behavioral psychologists tell us that as much as we want to believe that we are reasoned and rational, most of our decisions are made before we justify them. We are governed by our feelings and we then justify them. And art has an extraordinary capacity to hone and nurture our feelings and indeed to manipulate them. So you could see them as a root source somehow to truth. So engaging with our time, talking about the role of art, working with creative artists nowadays to reinforce the sense that a symphony orchestra is part of the present, part of a community, part of the needs of all of us on an everyday basis, which has the added virtue of allowing audiences to reframe the way they listen to, let's say, a Beethoven symphony, to remind themselves, because it's their daily experience listening to contemporary music, that Beethoven wrote for his time, to remind ourselves that there's nothing staid, there's nothing traditional inherently about what he did. Quite the opposite. He was a revolutionary and someone who pushed the boundaries of his art form forward. And that can be transferred across to almost every composer who's ever lived and whose music has endured. They tend to have been at the very front edge of the storytelling of their time. And I think that's an incredibly exciting story that is something that we as musicians and as organizations need to grab and celebrate.
And you're coming to Toronto as part of an ongoing annual exchange between the TSO and the National Arts Center Orchestra. When did this begin and why is it important?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. I'm not sure exactly what year it began, but I can tell you why I believe it's important. Firstly, I think that the institutional relationships across the country are extraordinarily fruitful. It begins with conversations around programming and soloists and commissioning, talking about supporting and working alongside creative artists and augmenting as collaborative institutions the work that these creative artists do, so that we're not working in sort of little isolated spheres, but we offer the opportunity to sort of leverage our work across the country. I think for our audiences here in Ottawa, to hear the National Arts Centre Orchestra perform is wonderful, and they celebrate it. And at the same time, to hear the superb Toronto Symphony Orchestra come through to present their performance is refreshing and exciting, alongside the other visiting orchestras that come through. We love taking our work down to Toronto to sort of present what we do, to have conversations around what's happening in Ottawa and how we program, where the overlaps are with TSO and the other organizations in the city, and where there are differences. And for organizations and orchestras specifically, touring also offers, on a somewhat selfish basis, the opportunity to hear what we sound like in different places, to feel the response of different audiences. And as we know, live performance is truly live. You could take the same orchestra, you could take the same piece, move it from one auditorium to another, and it will sound different. The hall will respond differently to our playing, through which we perform differently again. The tempi might be different, the coloration might be different, the attack, the transparency, all of these things will affect the immediacy of what the musicians do. And indeed, the focus and the feedback from the audience has an active bearing on the way that a performance plays out. So going to new places, engaging with new audiences, feeling that give and take is something that's rewarding, and I would say is also an artistic necessity in order to avoid things becoming in any way staid. So I can speak for the National Arts Centre when I say that we are so thrilled about this partnership, this friendship that exists between the NAC Orchestra and the Toronto Symphony Orchestra. And I personally have a profound admiration for your organization.
You're bringing a very interesting program, music by Kelly Marie Murphy, Saint-Saëns, and Jacques Etude. Can you walk us through this program?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd say that the probably standout point on this program is that it's not just the NAC Orchestra coming, it's that this is a collaborative project between the National Arts Centre Orchestra, the Orchestre Symphonique du Québec, and the Toronto Mendelssohn Choir. Coming out of COVID, we were keen to work on collaborative projects with partner organizations around the country to look at standing shoulder to shoulder where possible in sort of creative undertakings. And there has been an ongoing conversation with Orchestre Symphonique du Québec, and we work also regularly with Toronto Mendelssohn Choir. And we thought, okay, well, there is this superb piece of music, which was a TSO commission, Jacques Etude's Fifth Symphony. I think there's only one document of in existence, which is the beautiful performance under Peter Ungin, which was the world premiere just after Jacques Etude's death. And it felt like, because it's based on around the poem by Paul Edouard, the poem of Liberté, and the contextualization being Paris pre, during, and post Nazi occupation, and this idea of liberty in all ages and the power and the evocative quality of that word for us all, especially within the context of the pandemic, as was then. It seemed like this piece was a wonderful meeting point between the Quebec Symphony, the National Arts Centre Orchestra, coming to Toronto as well with the Mendelssohn Choir. So that's the focal point of the program in many ways, this great 45, 50-minute choral symphony, in which in the final movement, the poem Liberté is set to music and sung by the chorus. It's a masterpiece of Etude's that I've loved learning. I'm so looking forward to performing it. And of course, the bringing together of the two orchestras is going to be a fascinating undertaking. The different cultures of playing, the different approach to sound that the orchestras will have. We're going to have to, in short order, form something new, something that is entirely Canadian, but cross-border, and serves the vision of that great Canadian composer. So I'm very excited about that. And in the first half, the collaboration, the side-by-side nature of the project continues. We feature, as you mentioned, this work by Kelly Marie Murphy, which in fact the NEC commissioned and premiered not long ago. It was conceived as a partner work to Strauss's Don Juan. We have a series of partner works, commissions to Strauss's tone poems that we're performing and recording over the coming seasons. And along with Kevin Lau, Kelly Marie Murphy was one of the two composers who created the first companions. The other, by Kevin Lau, was for Death and Transfiguration.
And it's a beautiful title, Dark Stars, Bright Nights, Vast Universe.
It is, isn't it? And it's a wonderful and evocative piece that will kick off the program. And then we have this magnificent young Canadian soloist. I'm working with him for the first time, as is the orchestra, who has won several of the biggest piano competitions of the last couple of years. Kevin Chen, who's performing Saint-Saëns Piano Concerto. And I think that's going to be a really special moment for us all, because we're not only celebrating these two wonderful Canadian composers, Jacques Etu and Kelly Marie Murphy, but also I think one of the very brightest lights and the musical firmament of Canada, currently this young, wonderful pianist, Kevin Chen.
Well, Alexander Shelley, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. All the best for your preparations and travels, and we look forward to seeing and hearing you in Toronto.
Can't wait. Thank you for your time. Lovely to speak to you.